You're listening to the Cycling Podcast at the Vuelta a España in association with Rafa, celebrating the sport and producing the finest cycling clothing since 2004. Today we are in Monumento Vaca Pasier.
How does it feel?
Unbelievable.
And what does this mean?
Actually, look, listen, it means everything. First Grand Tour and a stage win. Just mind-blowing. Absolutely mind-blowing. Couldn't be happier. And what a great guy for it to happen to. Just incredible.
Why this guy special?
He's just a superstar. Look, he's worked hard all his cycling career. This is his first Grand Tour win. He's really, really hungry. Just delighted for him. Absolutely delighted for him. Fantastic. Great day for us.
Well, that was the understandably delighted Rick Delaney, the owner and boss of the Aqua Blue Sport Team. They were the winners today in the Vuelta a España. My name's Lionel Burney. This is a cycling podcast, and I am fairly chilly, and I'm with Daniel Free.
Hello.
And Fran Reyes.
Hello. I can't understand how you are suffering with this cold. I mean, yeah, okay, you are wearing shorts, but still, you are from the British Islands. You should know better how to support the cold.
Not Iceland. Not until Brexit actually happens.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm a Brit abroad on holiday in Spain. You know, I'm going to wear my shorts, come what may. Fran, where are we? It's the mist and the cloud is closing in and it is cold, but where are we?
We are up in Los Machucos, a climb in the middle of more or less nowhere here in Cantabria. Cantabria is one of the northernmost regions of Spain, one of the most prone to rain and cold, and has quite an easy, simple life and quite easy, simple, small villages. And this climb to Los Machucos is just one bit of road which has been asphalted for some reason to joining two of those little villages.
Well, it's quite an extraordinary row. We'll talk about that in a minute. But first of all, let's recap what happened on stage 17 of the Vuelta. From Villa Diego to Los Machucos, 180 kilometres with this incredible climb at the finish. We'll talk about that in a minute. The stage belonged to the Aqua Blue Sport Team, the Irish team riding their first Grand Tour. The smallest team in the race, arguably, because they got Stefan Denifil, their 29-year-old Austrian rider, into the break. It was a good-looking break, too. Danny Moreno of Movistar was in it, Alessandro De Marchi of BMC Racing, Julian Alaphilippe of Quickstep Floors, and Magnus Cort Nielsen of Orica Scott. David Villela of Cannondale, the King of the Mountains leader, was in there at one point as well, but he lost contact and was chasing. There was a split in the main GC group, and Rafał Majka, the Polish rider of Bora Hansgrohe, missed the split, and so Bora did a lot of work to close that gap. But the finale of the stage was all about Denifil and Alberto Contador. The Austrian had plenty of advantage going into the climb, but it was gradually getting chipped away, but he held on to win by 28 seconds. Contador's efforts were in vain today, but he has one big last chance on the Angliru on Saturday, and who knows what he might try in between now and then. Because let's not forget, the Spanish still don't have a stage win here. Miguel Angel Lopez was third, just ahead of Vincenzo Nibali and Ilnur Zakarin, who put time into Chris Froome. And that was the other big story of the day. Froome is still in the red jersey, but he's conceded 42 seconds of his advantage to Nibali and now leads by 1 minute and 16. Wilco Kelderman, Zakarin and Contador are still third, fourth and fifth overall, although the Spaniard has closed in to only 3:34 behind. Michael Woods, who's riding for Cannondale Drapac, crossed the line in the Nibali-Zakarin group, and he's moved up to 7th. Riders who slipped back a bit today, Fabio Aru from 7th to 9th, and Esteban Chavez from 9th to 12th. So, Stefan Denifil winning the stage for Aqua Blue. He's one of the riders that they picked up from I Am Cycling, who folded at the end of last season. Of course, a good climber, and started out as a mountain biker, so probably found it quite easy twiddling those tiny gears on the climb. Earlier this season, he won the Tour of Austria, and coincidentally, he took the lead on the day that Miguel Angel Lopez won a stage. So he would have, you know, would have been aware that Lopez was one of those riders chasing him up the mountain. Fairly comfortable in the end, wasn't it, Daniel? But we had quite a dramatic drive up here, didn't we?
Yeah, we did. Well, we almost didn't make it, did we? No, and in fact, I think tomorrow the ITV team's going to be on our fourth car of the Vuelta. That must be some kind of record, because Fran's looking aghast. He's looking shocked. Fran, this is a preventative measure. This is how professional we are. We're thinking about the stages to come. We're thinking about the Anglia in particular, and I'm not sure our clutch is going to make it. So we're going to take that car out of the race. We're going to bring in a replacement.
Well, I'm travelling with Simon, the photographer, Simon Gill, that is, and we're in a Fiat 500L, which is kind of a small, the bigger version of the tiny Fiat 500, and we were worried whether we would get up here. There was also a press release went out, or a communique to the press saying that you had to have a car full of people to come up here because the road was extraordinary. So we jumped in with Daniel and his TV cameraman, Scott, and, you basically bottled it, didn't you? You made Simon drive all the way.
Well, I certainly didn't. Someone else in the car might have bottled it.
You were offered the chance to take over the drive, but it was a hairy old drive and an incredible road up to the finish here. I mean, if you haven't seen it on TV, it was incredibly steep at places, 25, 26, 27% there. It was narrow, it was bumpy, but the worst sections were the concrete bits, which had ridges and ruts, and the corners of those bends were, you know, ridiculous. And as we saw, all of the riders went around the widest part of the corners where it was a little bit less severe. But what's your thoughts on that kind of climb being in the race? I mean, it's not as long as the Anglia, is it? But at times it certainly seemed to be more severe.
Probably one of the keys to why we saw quite significant time gaps when often on these kind of climbs we don't, was that there were these sections, these fairly flat sections or false flat sections, where the guys who were going really well could kind of consolidate and add to their leads, and the guys who were struggling were probably recouping or trying to recover on those sections, and fairly significant. Like I say, Contador taking over a minute, was it, on Froome in the end? Nibali taking 40 seconds. Again, Froome rode in a very calculated manner, I thought, and it's interesting, he's keen to insist on that point and stress that point in all of his press conferences, all of his interviews, how much he's having to use his head. I think he's quite enjoying riding that sort of tactical race. He's entered a sort of different phase of his career, hasn't he? Like, seen in the last couple of years that he's reveled in being more attacking, more spontaneous, improvising. I think here at this Vuelta, he's really enjoying riding a kind of spoiling race in a way.
Well, we'll talk a bit about Chris Froome and the GC in part two, but really we should give Aqua Blue their due, because this is their first Grand Tour. They're a small team. They've got some riders who have ridden at this level before, but they've also got a lot of debutants. They've had a real up and down time. Of course, their team bus was set on fire by an arsonist last week, and they had to get a replacement very quickly. One of the Portuguese teams lent them a bus, which is what they're using now, isn't it?
Yeah, LA Antarty.
Yeah, that's right. So it's almost half a victory for them as well here in the Vuelta, maybe.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, after the Vuelta Portugal, finally a Portuguese team is performing on a high level.
Well, I stood at the top, and just as Stefan Denifil was coming off the podium, a couple of his teammates had crossed the line here, and I grabbed a quick word with Lassie Norman Hansen, the Danish rider, and then, once I'd finished talking to him, Connor Dunn, who is last overall on GC, he came in. So this is Lassie Norman Hansen and Connor Dunn of Aqua Blue. Are you trying to get a glimpse of your teammate, Stefan?
Yeah, I was looking for him. I wanted to hug him and congratulate him. It's a massive thing for the team and for him himself. It's a massive, massive performance and just a huge, huge win for the team.
It really is. You've won a stage before a Spaniard had won a stage of the Vuelta.
Yeah, as you say, that's itself is pretty good. And we are like the smallest team here, so yeah, we're really, really happy to get away with the win.
Can you tell me a little bit about Stefan, what kind of teammate he is?
He's always the happy guy, and he's the climber. Sometimes he's the quiet guy who sits in the back, but when he says something, it's always happy.
And he used to be a mountain biker, so that probably came in handy on the very steep parts in the very small gear.
Yeah, he is a climber, so he climbs well up the steep pitches, so yeah. Just so happy for him.
And what do you think will happen tonight? A glass of something sparkling to celebrate?
Hopefully. I do hope so. We have a non-alcohol policy in the team, but I think a win will change that for tonight.
Oh, man. Unbelievable. Can't believe it. We've been suffering this race a bit, you know, and we've been down a few times. Our bus burnt down. and we stuck together, you know. We stayed positive, we're all friends, we kept it going, believed in each other. And to see you here, Stefan, win today, incredible, absolutely incredible.
What was the discussion in the team meeting this morning? Was there a plan?
Just to get Stefan in the break, Stefan or Mark, and we covered the moves, you know, and I took him to the front and he went and he was hovering in the break at like 10 seconds and he did it, you know.
Oh, incredible.
And what about yourself? You made it. That and the Angleroo, two big ones, first ones ticked off.
Yeah, I was suffering today a bit again on the long climb and I was just at the back of the peloton on the descent and lost contact in the fog. I didn't know where I was just riding. And then in the gruppetto, I was okay. I knew I'd be okay from there. And then we heard he won on the last climb and I just didn't feel the pain anymore. I just wanted to get to the top.
How far from the top were you when you heard that he'd won on the radio?
Like 5 or 6K, yeah. And we heard the whole thing, you know. And I didn't know what, if he was going to do it, if he was with other people. But then we were all screaming and we knew he'd won. Unbelievable, one of those moments that just makes it worth it, you know.
Brilliant. Well, I'll let you go and put something warm on. Thanks very much.
Thank you. Thanks.
The RAFA Cycling Club is the largest global community of its kind. Members share their passion for the road through rides, events, exclusive club kits and racing. Find out more at rafa.cc.
Thank you to RAFA for sponsoring the cycling podcast. We're all wearing our snug RAFA jackets. The only thing keeping me warm, I'm warm enough down to the waist, but I wish I'd put some long trousers on. While we were just taking a little pause there, Fran, you were asking Daniel, the car that he's in that suffered on the climb so badly, you know, who would you equate, which rider would you equate the car to?
I don't want to be unfair because I thought long and hard about what I'd said in yesterday's podcast about some riders doing a bad time trial. I thought it was very unfair, hypercritical. And I don't want to cast similar aspersions on anyone today. However, I would suppose it's been a fairly sort of patchy, intermittent performance from this car. I would say maybe Nicholas Roach had some great days, struggled maybe on the steeper stuff. But it's a very good-looking car.
What about your car, Fran? Because I spent a lot of the first week in your car, and it put me in mind of a sort of student road trip.
We call our car Antonio Pedrero, like the movie Star Rider, because it's small, it has a small engine, yet it's performing great on this Vuelta. And we made it today to Los Machucos.
Well, let's talk about the race, because the GC battle, which looked pretty much done and dusted, I think I said yesterday, well, that's it, the Vuelta is won, and you know there might be a couple of skirmishes, but Chris Froome is looking well set to win his first Vuelta in Madrid on Sunday, and all of a sudden there's just a little bit of doubt, isn't there?
Yeah, there is, and we suspected yesterday that he was a bit ill or that he was a little bit run down. I think that is the case. It was interesting that he gave quite, I wouldn't say a curt reply, but certainly a short reply when he was asked about his health this evening. He said, no, he's fine. Of course, he wouldn't want to give it away if he was feeling a little bit ill. Again, he insisted on the fact that he'd really ridden with his head today and not deliberately not gone too deep. Although it was interesting that he was the rider who had talked so much about riders possibly paying for going too hard in the time trial, yet he admitted tonight that that's exactly what had happened to him. You know, looking ahead to tomorrow's stage, on paper it's by no means one of the hardest stages of the Vuelta, but it's got a number of climbs in the finale, notably the climb on which Contador launched his now legendary attack towards Fuente Day. It's the Collada de la Hoz?
Yes.
Which is not a particularly difficult climb, but it might be an ideal launch pad for someone to really set things alight. I've mixed metaphors terribly there, but
that's fine. You've also foreshadowed what Fran and I are going to talk about in the third part after you've headed off down the mountain, Daniel.
I interviewed Nicola Portal on the finish line, and I asked him straight away about the Froome's health, and he gave me a negative answer. He said that Chris Froome was, of course, pretty well and healthy, yet he covered his back. Talking about today's stage, we've seen Chris losing time to the rest of the favourites. What happened?
Well, I think the legs, what can I say? I don't know actually right now how much time we lost. The last time we just been also listened Radio 2 was about more than 40 seconds on Nibali, and a bit more than 1 minute on Alberto. So I don't know exactly how much it is. I hope it's not that much, but yeah, we'll see. Every second count on this Vuelta.
As we were watching the stage and the president, there were some people saying that maybe he had caught some kind of sickness or cough. Is that true, or is there no reality in that?
Maybe in the stage, but before that, no, I don't think so. I mean, I'm not aware about this. I think he was healthy. Yesterday he did a pretty solid time trial, so.
About Alberto Contador, what do you make of his performance today?
Well, I think it was a chapeau for him, you know. This is a kind of mini Langliro, if you could make a shortcut like this. And he's Alberto Contador, you know. He's one of who can do this kind of big show, you know. I think he's going to be pretty happy. Probably for him, is like, I think he didn't win the stage, no, I guess. He will probably retire again when it became super steep. We know he's super strong. But chapeau also for all the others who've been in front of Offroomy or so. Because the pace must be pretty, pretty fast.
Seeing the terrain that is ahead with middle mountain and kind of lumpy stages coming, are you afraid of his offensives? Maybe he can gain enough time to contend on GC?
This is not something like it surprised me or surprised everyone. It is how it is, and we're on the third week of the Grand Tour. It's going to be super hard, so you cannot plan. For us, we cannot plan what's going to happen. We just need to race, and it's just about the legs now. They're so hard stages, so we just need to do our best with our team, run through me. I think the most important thing is how to pace yourself. Depend if you're good or not, you can make so many mistakes, you know, if you pace yourself wrong. And then obviously, if you got the legs, that's good. If he probably like today, he didn't have that much legs, then you can be how he is. You know, every 10 meters, you lost time. So, yeah, we'll see.
Interesting.
Well, I mean, he was certainly grateful of a lot of help from his teammates because he was looked after very well by them, even on the very steep parts of the climb. As you say, Daniel, it was damage limitation. Vincenzo Nibali was the one who really turned the screw, and Ilnur Zakarin was able to go with him. Nibali will be encouraged by that, particularly as we know how well he does tend to go towards the end of Grand Tours. He won't be giving up, will he?
No, and I think he's right back in it. 1 minute, 16 seconds down. He's within range of a one attack, one lethal, one absolute decisive attack on the Anglira. We've seen time gaps of much more than a minute 16 on the Anglira before. Froome has no more time trials up his sleeve, nowhere where he's absolutely sure to gain time. So, and you know, time bonuses as well might be a factor. So I think it's wide open again. And Nibali is probably the only rider I can see winning it. But Nibali might also be the guy to benefit if Contador decides to go berserk, for example, tomorrow, which I think he will.
In terms of Nibali's strengths and weaknesses, we said earlier in the race that these real sort of super steep ramps.
Interviews with me, a weakness? He's been all right the last few days.
I was following that with interest at home, watching the highlights on ITV, as I did, and noticing the breakdown in relations between you and Nibali, but everything's repaired now. But you did make the point, Daniel, that the super steep stuff is not necessarily where he goes best, and yet he rode really well today.
Yeah, he did. He said he felt odd. He had strange sensations. I don't know what that meant on the final climb. But, you know, again, he's proving what a class act he is in Grand Tours. So consistent. If you look at his record over the course of his career, I think he's finished outside the top 10 in Grand Tours maybe twice. He never really disappoints, and as you say, he never really disappoints in the last week. He always comes good. He's not the most spectacular when he launches attacks. He's not making up major ground on Chris Froome when he is dropping him, but as I say, I think he'll look ahead to the next few days with renewed hope.
Well, a rider who is very comfortable on the super steep stuff and perhaps suffers a little bit on the longer, draggier stuff is the Canadian Michael Woods. And he was excellent again today, finished in that Nibali-Zakarin group and has moved up a couple of places overall. And I chatted to him briefly at the finish in between. He was coughing a little bit. I wanted to know whether he thought that a climb of this severity was appropriate for a Grand Tour. And he made the point that it was actually the descents that were the most dangerous in the wet today. Can you put into words what that climb's like?
Relentless. Actually, it eases up. It would pitch and ease up every once in a while, but those pitches, like, you only had one speed. That was it. You couldn't really keep... You couldn't go with any slower. It was just so hard. Especially with the wet. You know, the rear wheel's sliding quite a bit. But, Yeah, it's a pretty special climb.
Extreme, but too extreme in your opinion, or is it fair that the race takes on a climb like that?
No, I don't think it's too extreme. I do think what was too extreme was the first descent of the day after the Cat 2. It was too dangerous. There were, like, wet's one thing, but then also the pavement was in such bad condition that all it took was one bad bump and no guardrail, you're going off a cliff. The Vuelta shouldn't have put it there.
What about the concrete sections with the ridges? Was that the most challenging part?
Definitely. And you know, but going uphill, like, the safety's not an issue. It's more just the challenge of cycling, and I think that was pretty. It was pretty cool. I liked it.
And what gear did you have on there?
Pardon me. I had a 32 on, but I was cursing Juanma the whole way up, wishing he told me not to use a compact, and I could have used a compact for sure.
Well, next time, or maybe on the Angliru.
Exactly.
Michael Wood's making the point about the wet roads. I'm sure the Vuelta organisers would have been, keeping their fingers crossed, hoping for the best today, because when race organisers take a race into such controversial territory as this, they need the weather to be on their side. Otherwise, you know, it could have been an awful lot worse. It was damp rather than outright wet. The descents looked pretty sketchy, but they kind of got away with it, and nobody seemed to be complaining about either the climb or the descents too much today. Just to trail an episode of Kilometre Zero on a similar theme, that's coming out on Friday morning. I've spoken to David Miller about the Angliru climb, which is featuring on Saturday. And, of course, in 2002, David Miller rode all the way up the Angliru, got to within sight of the finish line, stopped and took his race numbers off his jersey in protest. At the time, people thought he was protesting about the steepness of the Angliru because it was being, it got a lot of attention for being one of the steepest, most difficult climbs in world cycling. But he was actually complaining about the difficulty and danger of the descent in the wet. Anyway, we had quite a far-reaching conversation. It branched out into all sorts of areas. So that will be Kilometre Zero on Friday. And if you haven't caught up with Wednesday's Kilometre Zero about the last three men surviving in the Dimension Data team, here's a small trailer.
Listen to Kilometre Zero, our morning show at the Vuelta a España, by becoming a friend of the Cycling Podcast at thecyclingpodcast.com.
I think bike riders generally are so, like, they just see the positive. They're like, oh, sweet, you must have so much room on the bus. Like, you know, it's just some sort of virus. It started with Ben King on the very first day of the race, and it's just slowly worked through everyone. Yeah, you know, we'll keep fighting on. Hopefully we can get stuck into the last week.
Cycling Podcast is supported by Science in Sport. Science in Sport, fueled by science.
Thank you very much to Science in Sport for sponsoring the Cycling Podcast. If you are thinking of buying some Science in Sport products, you can get 20% off everything you buy by entering the code CPAUG20. That's CPAUG20. And if you put that in at checkout, you'll get 20% off. Okay, Fran, well, hopefully we're going to get off this mountain before the clouds close in even more. It's pretty chilly up here, isn't it?
Your back is now pretty muddy. Oh.
Oh, no, my bag has fallen over into some mud, and that... I hope that's not... We're standing next to a sculpture of a bull, or is it a buffalo?
No, not a buffalo, definitely. This is a cow. This is a vaca pasiega, which is a big thing here in Cantabria, a special breed of cow.
Well, my bag is now covered in a special product of cow. Anyway, we want to get down off this mountain. It's getting pretty chilly up here. I felt sorry for the riders who were coming over the top. There were not many team vehicles up here. They just had to put a jacket on and then descend all the way down to where the team buses are down at the bottom. But inevitably, after such a great day's racing, thoughts will turn to tomorrow. I don't know what you made of Chris Froome there in the press conference, but he was putting a brave face on it. And looking at stage 18 from Suances to Santo Toribio de Liebana.
Not that good. You were better off the record. When you were on the mic, you were great. But now,
I know.
Santo Toribio de Liebana.
I was good off mic. I mean, that's it, really. As soon as the mic goes on, I freeze. I bottle it. But anyway, it's a stage with a very tricky-looking second half, really. It's only 169 kilometres, and then there's this rash of third and one second category climb and a third category climb up to the finish. It looks almost like the teeth on a chain ring, doesn't it, the profile of tomorrow's stage?
I was speaking today with Fran Ventoso, local rider. He's from Reynosa, a village pretty close to Suances, where the stage begins, racing for BMC racing team right now. And he gave me the key clue about tomorrow's stage. This is the exact route of the Queen stage of the now disappeared Circuito Montañés. That was a UCI.2 stage race held here in Cantabria in June every year, and it attracted like some of the best young prospects of the world. This stage of Santo Toribio di Liévana did decide the outcome of the GC. It features three climbs, the Collados, Collado de Carmona, Collado de Zalba, and Collada de la Hoz, which are 5 kilometers climbs with steady ramps, and then finishes up on Santo Toribio di Liévana, which is...
Oh, Fran, you were so much better off the mic before we started recording.
Oh, well, I hesitate because I want to look nice, you know. But yeah, so Santo Toribio di Liévana is typical uphill finish of the Vuelta, you know, a couple of kilometers, crazy gradients, not that much though, but, well, fair enough. So this being one of the main Spanish races for amateur riders, I assume that most of the Spanish riders do know them pretty good. Do know this stage and this route by heart. And do you know which foreign rider does know it too?
Go on.
TJ Van Garderen. Oh. He was second in Santo Toribio de Liévana in 2009, and that served him to win the GC of the Circuito Montañés. He was beaten by Sergio Pardilla, who is now fighting to make the top 20 for Caja Rural, you know, a team that actually thinks that making it to the top 20 of the GC is a thing.
So is it the kind of roads where we could see real difficulty for Chris Froome if, say, Vincenzo Nibali or Alberto Contador or any of the dangerous riders decide to make it hard on the climbs? Is it the sort of the roads where there could be an ambush, where somebody could sneak away and suddenly the time gap's 20 seconds, 30 seconds and very difficult to keep under control?
Yeah, Fran Ventoso gave the answer to your question. This is a stage pretty similar to Fuente de, the stage in 2012, where Alberto Contador took the red jersey of leader of Vuelta a España from to Pulito Rodríguez, where he effectively did win the Vuelta. And I think so. I think this can be a pretty spectacular stage from a strategical point of view.
In a funny kind of way, Contador now being that little bit closer to the podium, in a way, it's easier for Sky to control, isn't it? Because they can't let him have an inch, or they can't let him have a couple of millimetres, because, you know, if he takes, you know, a minute and a half, say, then suddenly it's looking very dangerous for the Angliru stage. In a way, it would be more dangerous for Froome if Contador was still 4 or 5 minutes back, because then they might be tempted just to leave him go a little bit, and suddenly there's something for other riders, particularly Nibali, to try and ride off the back of, if you see what I mean.
Yeah, but the thing is, it's not only about Contador and Nibali, it's about the rest of the riders. All the GC riders that are not that far away from Froome, actually, know that tomorrow's stage is the best chance to beat Team Sky as they did last year in Formigal. So I am pretty sure that they are going to try and go on the offensive if they have the legs to do it.
Well, we'll see tomorrow what happens, of course, and we'll be at the finish to talk about it. So tune in then, listeners. Hopefully it'll be a bit warmer down there. What will the weather be like?
A bit warmer and less rainy in theory. I mean, I wish for my sneakers, you know, because I don't have any solid shoes to put on. So I'd rather keep it dry tomorrow.
Well, let's hope that, let's hope it's nice and warm. We need to get down off this mountain. It's always the same with these mountain top finishes, the traffic jam to get off the mountain. The road can look nice and clear. But the good thing about being in Spain is that they're still serving dinner very late, so I won't go hungry, hopefully.
Oh, boy. You are going to enjoy Cachopo so much in a couple of days.
Well, thanks very much, Fran. See you again tomorrow at the start.
See you tomorrow, Lionel.